views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
And water beds. Good morning. I'm Nick Gardner. Poke the Hornet's Nest. I'm here with
Doug Janke.
And I'm so happy you're here. I've got some.
Well, I was a little bit downbeat right there because you were so with that music and you're so excited to start the show. I just kind of wanted to kind of offset your energy because you're bouncing in here, buddy.
That's right. And it's natural. I don't have to chop it up and snort it, smoke it, or shoot it up. It's natural. I'm stuck in fast forward and I can't slow down, especially on Sunday mornings.
There might be a blue shirt, but not a blue pill, buddy. So you're good. What's up?
Well, I've got what I think is funny, sad news. About 10 years ago, well, it's not 10 years, it's been 7 or 8 years, I turned off the TV, I quit watching TV, I realized I was just wasting money with background noise, and I quit watching sports, not deliberately, it's just because it wasn't convenient, I don't go to bars, and so I wasn't interested. So Caitlin Clark comes up this year, and I start watching her on YouTube,
yep.
And I loved her. I looked to see if Sacramento had a franchise, if I could go to a game and watch her.
Uh-huh.
And they have picked on her, and the last game, or the second to last game in the playoffs, that one gal tried to put out her eyes. I don't know if you saw it.
Uh-uh, I didn't see that.
She came down with her long fingernails, looked like they were about 3 inches long, and poked it right in her face and gave her a black eye. She's been beat up and picked on the whole season. She announced she's done with the WNBA. She's going to Europe.
Good. I'm glad.
That's exactly what I thought,
absolutely,
too. They've been knocking her around.
Because she's white. Because she's white. Let's
and
talk about race.
And they're jealous of her
she's
because
white.
She's better than them.
She's just a great athlete. Forget the color of her skin, but it's because she's white. If that was a black girl doing that, there would be none of this. She'd be praised. She'd be on Oprah. She'd be on every show on the planet. It's because she's white, and she's really good.
That's right.
Yeah.
And,
no.
I saw that headline, and I just had to laugh. Good for you.
Yep. That's what I would do. Let NBA, WNBA lose a ton of money.
They were losing money till she showed up.
Yeah.
You know, they were having to fly commercial. Because of her, they got private jets.
Really?
The teams did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hope they go back to commercial economy like I fly.
Well, you know, they're the complete equal of men. So, you know, the men have, the teams have their own private jets to begin with a lot of times. So, that'd be interesting. But no, I did not see the headline, but bravo. I played in Europe for 6 seasons, and I can tell you.
You're too fat to play basketball. Who you BS?
Well, I played baseball. The
lazy, oh, okay.
The lazy man
probably
sport.
Probably first base, one of them places you don't have to run, huh?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Caitlin, if you're listening, and I know you are one of our true listeners, go have fun. It's a great place over there, except now it's full of immigrants, but that's another story.
You know, speaking of baseball, I had a couple cousins out here, Steve and Garen. And I took a day off and drove them around.
Every day's a day off for you, Chief.
That's right, because I'm high on life and it's free. And I took them up to Bernie Falls and McLeod River Falls and Castle Lake, and we had a Yaksburger. And we drove by the ballpark there in Dunsmuir, and I said, Babe Ruth played here. And these guys are baseball fans. Babe Ruth never played here. I said, yeah, he did. A friend of mine's got a picture of it. He never played here. So my cousin Steve, he gets out the phone. Alexis, Babe Ruth played in Dunsmuir, and here it goes. It was so funny.
Yeah.
They couldn't believe it because their father was a major league material till he tore his knee up, I understand.
Oh.
And they got introduced to Harmon Killebrew.
Oh. Yeah.
He was in the clique. He was acquaintances of this.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, Babe Ruth was on a traveling team. I think it was in an off season or something like that, and he just wanted to stay sharp, and he was with some traveling team, and they played in Dunsmuir. Absolutely.
I think he had Stan Musial with him.
That little baseball field right next to the freeway.
Yeah. There's pictures of that. They were on a Goodwill tour.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I wanted to bring up the fact of how our news is being censored to us.
Still. That's amazing. That's a newsflash.
Well, it is so blatant now. 60 Minutes had an interview with Kamala Harris, and they censored her answer.
Yep.
They didn't censor it. They changed it.
Yep.
They pre-recorded it, and then they didn't like her word salad of an answer, and they shortened it up and brought it. And I've got it right here. Listen real close, because you'll hear him ask the question in her first original answer. Then you'll hear him ask the question and her since the adjusted answer that they came up with. So could we play that click?
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
But it seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
We are not going to stop pursuing what is necessary for the United States to be clear about where we stand on the need for this war to end.
But it seems that...
Isn't that something? Did you catch that?
Well, I mean, she... I just listen to her and I get lost. I just get lost. She doesn't answer a question ever. So, yeah, no, I did hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's getting really frustrating. I watched, and I'm sure most of you watched also, when her teleprompter went out.
Oh, you know what's funny? I haven't had a chance to see that, but I had like four people text me. Did you see it?
Oh, it's hilarious. You know, and that's the first time I saw how a teleprompter works, because you can't see it from the audience.
Uh-uh.
It's just a little square piece of plastic.
Yeah.
But it's got the words right across there, and they're basically just reading somebody else's speech.
Yep.
I miss the days when a president probably had to make up most of his own speech or anybody speaking.
Yep.
I see him at the Board of Supervisors reading off their phone.
But,
It malfunctioned for about 30 seconds, and she was lost.
Oh, yeah. Now, Obama had a couple of those, too, and everybody's like, oh, Obama's a great orator. No, he's not. He was a horrible orator. If it didn't have a teleprompter, that dude could not give a coherent speech. But, you know, was he jovial? Was he entertaining? I guess to that degree, yeah. You know who actually, this pains me to say this, Nick, but I, as a board member for the Board of Realtors, as a traveling director, I had to go to Sacramento 5 years in a row for meetings. And this was during the time of Comrade Brown, Jerry. And I will say that dude was an off-the-cuff, no pre-scripted stuff, at least with realtors. He would just sit there and start telling stories and jokes and the whole works. And so for as much as I hate the man, I got to say he was a politician that actually could do without the teleprompter. He never had one at one of those events.
You know, when we come out of our halftime break, I've got a clip coming up of President Trump. And he'll sit there and he'll say, ask the question. I mean, he doesn't have – he's not dependent on a teleprompter or anything to answer the question.
No, you know, what's funny is I've heard it said before, the problem with Trump is they want him to stay on script. He goes off. He just turns a left turn and then he's asking questions and telling stories and, you know, I know what a great person – and you're like, that's probably not written three times to say great people. I know what great people are. I know what great – he probably doesn't say that in his teleprompter. So he actually might be the one politician that his writers go, just stay on script. Just read what you're supposed to read.
And don't use names.
Yes.
Just like Carl told us.
Yeah,
don't use names.
Wrong. He told you. I'm allowed to use names all I want.
He's got special rules for me, I think.
I hear him every first Thursday of the month.
You know, we're going to talk about Proposition P and Q after the second half. And I've got a commercial, that kind of a commercial that I have with Mark Mazzano.
Yeah.
And we'll discuss that. You know, I've been saying for years that I thought that the Forest Service is burning off our property on purpose.
I'm not going to say on purpose. I'm going to say BLM, the Forest Service, and the other millions of acres they have, they're beholden to the special interests of, like, the environmental groups who sue them if they want to do a logging plan, and it could tie it up for 10, 15 years. And so they've just given up. I mean, it's just not worth it anymore.
Well, why don't we just burn it off, and then we can salvage log it?
They won't let that happen either.
Well, you know...
Because on federal land, you're not supposed to have mechanical machinery. I mean...
Any federal land, or are you talking about parts?
Well, parts of it. Because I remember we had brought in the three battalion chiefs when we first started, you and I. Our bromance was just blooming. And they were talking about that even CAL FIRE, if they see a fire on certain federal designated lands, they can't just go on and fight it. They got to go through the chain of command, ask if it's all right to take on chainsaws. And, I mean, they were telling the story, you know, this is almost 2 years ago, I guess, maybe a little bit longer, about how just, I don't know the word corrupt, but stupid the federal laws are. And so I'm not sure they're doing it on purpose. I think they just gave up.
I believe that it's over-engineered. We've got these guys with masters that don't have any experience in the forest, and they have figured out if we burn it off in 200 years, it's going to be natural the way it was in the 1900s. So I stumbled across this website called The Lookout, and they were talking about the Shoe Fire. The Shoe Fire's right up here between, it's not even Squaw Creek anymore. They've renamed it. But it's between the Pitt River and the McLeod River. And we're going to listen. There's four clips here. And pay attention and listen to this guy. Could we have clip number one, please?
So now SPI owns a ton of this checkerboard. So this is a problem for managing fire on the landscape, because this fire is going to end up being kind of 50% belonging to Sierra Pacific and 50% belonging to the Forest Service. And they've got such different management outlooks, right? So SPI doesn't want their land to burn. Forest Service, like, they recognize that there's going to be a lot of ecological benefit to this fire burning. It's burning in a lot of oak. Like, when you look at this imagery here, you can really see, like, the conifer versus the oak / chaparral. And oak forest isn't really harmed for the most part by fire. It's kind of reset and it all sprouts back. So as far as like managing this land, like for a lot of us kind of fire ecology types, like I would be fine with this entire landscape burning right now. You know, if this fire ended up burning all the way out to the McLeod River and all the way down to Shasta Lake and to the Pitt River over the next month, I would be happy. I would be freaking stoked, because what else are we going to do with this land? The Forest Service is not going to do anything with this land. There's hardly any timber worth taking anymore. Most of the timber that was worth taking out here has been kind of mined out of the landscape over the last 60 years. And this is oaks, and this is wild land, and there's just about no one living out here. And it's incredible habitat for deer and all kinds of wildlife. And there's just no other real option. Like, we're not going to probably come out here and, like, do a 30,000-acre prescribed fire. It'd be great if we could, but that's not going to happen. So if a wildfire is going to do it for us, I'd be stoked. However, I'm not a forester working for SPI, and SPI is the last thing they want. They've taken.
Okay, so this guy's an idiot. I fell timber up in that, up there behind Shasta Lake.
Yeah.
On Squaw Creek.
Yep.
On the Squaw Creek arm, the North Fork of Squaw Creek. There's big, wonderful, old-growth timber in there, and there's a lot of it. When you come in from Fenders Ferry Road, you start dropping down into the, the Squaw River Basin. There's so much timber up there, old-growth timber, and this guy's going to burn it up and kill it.
Well, you know, again, you were saying something about the overeducated people. I will say he's got one point, and that is, you know, before us bipedal hominids took over the earth, this happened on a regular basis all around the world.
It didn't happen to this degree, and I'll tell
you
why.
No, I know we'll talk about that, but I'm just saying, but it happened naturally, and then we kind of came in and altered what was already going on. So this is something that could have happened regardless if we're here or not. But to sit there and say we're going to make deer and all this stuff habitat better by making this landscape completely black for 5 years, that doesn't make sense at all.
Well, in 5 years, it's grown back up. What happens?
But it's all bush that grows back.
What happens is when the forest burns, and this guy wants to manage for oak, it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
What happens when a landscape burns, a forested landscape, the conifers are dead.
Yep.
When they kill the conifers, they're dead. But you kill an oak down to the ground, the root system's still alive, and the suckers come up unbelievably fast. In 5 years, it's another fire trap.
Well, instead of having a tree, you have a bush.
It's so thick that the danged deer can't get through it.
Oh, I know. No, it's no longer an oak tree. It's an oak bush, and it just blossoms out sideways, and it becomes just suffocating. You can't walk through it at all.
I've just had that problem over at my house with PG&E. They cut off a bunch of little trees that didn't need to be cut off, and now we've got a fire trap over there. And I've got Mark Mazzano and Kevin Cry. They came over. They're going to try and get a handle on a problem and alleviate the problem. That's what I've got to say about Mark and Kevin. They're hands on. You got a problem, they'll come and look at it.
Well, that's what they're supposed to do. They're part of the
But getting back to this guy that wants to burn off the forest, it looks to me like they did that with the Dixie Fire.
Yeah.
And the Park Fire. And the fire up there at Lassen Park about 10 years ago, when it was just smoldering along and they let it burn in the middle of July, and all of a sudden it gets off and burns a third of our park up there, that park's never going to come back as nice as it was.
No, and definitely not in our lifetime. We're going to have to go up there and get used to seeing just empty landscape with burned up matchsticks.
So let's hear Idiot Stick on clip number 2, please.
In that case, that company was pushing hard on CAL FIRE to get the Forest Service to change their approach, because the Forest Service's approach on HERS was to build a big box and proceed with kind of a firing plan. So their big box was like, hey, we're going to take it to the river, we're going to build some other indirect line, but we're going to like fire this whole area. And once they kind of started on that plan, then they had like, you know, 10 or 14 day kind of work plan of how that was going to happen. And unfortunately for my friend's company, his company had just finished clear cutting one of these units out here, and the logs were still in the clear cut, and the fire was burning. The Forest Service was going to fire off this ridge, and eventually the entire clear cut area was going to be inside the final fire perimeter, but it hadn't burned yet. And so they were pushing hard, like, hey, can you guys kind of hold off firing this for a few more days so we can haul some of these logs out of this clear cut? But it wasn't really, like, the Forest Service was on a timed kind of tactical plan. Like, hey, we're going to fire this today, we're going to fire that tomorrow. And so CAL FIRE actually pushed some dozer line out in the middle of that, saying, like, hey, we think you could hang it up here. And then the Forest Service fire teams got to their dozer line. They just kept going. And anyway, there was an enormous amount of political pressure during the HERS fire applied by the private timber companies via, you know, calls to Congress, calls to the governor, to go direct on this fire and make a smaller box. And so the firefighters kind of get screwed, because they make a plan, they start doing it, and then they're getting calls from the governor like, hey, you need to go direct here, you need to go indirect, you know, you got to keep this smaller, we know you've got a plan, but SPI doesn't want you to burn their clear cuts up.
So when they refer to a box, this box with the HERS fire, which started with a lightning strike, was probably about 50 sections of ground. A section is 640 acres.
Yep.
So they've got this little fire, and they decide they need to catch up on their controlled burns. So they just make a big box. It's just, say it's 10 or 12 or 15 miles on each side of the box, and they're going to facilitate burning the whole damn thing down. And they act like this is a fire plan. Well, they just put it together because of a lightning strike, and to heck with anybody privately in that box, we're going to burn you out. They burned up these loggers' logs that they'd been working in there. Sierra Pacific takes... And they use herbicides to kill off the trees like the oaks and the manzanita and stuff. And they go in and plant. And you can see the results of their plantations. Actually, the trees are too close together a lot,
yeah,
of the time. But they grow up and they go good. If you go to
Bernie. Right, go up Bernie towards the old fountain fire. That was a million trees replanted 20-something years ago, and that's a full forest out there now.
Yeah, and you get up there about to the start of Hatchet Mountain, and you look up at the right spot, you can see a straight line, and here's a forest that SPI has planted, and here's a brush patch that the Forest Service just let it go back to natural. And, you know, to me... It's a difference in philosophies between CAL FIRE and the Forest Service. The Forest Service wants to manage a fire. They want to let it burn. Cal Fire wants to get up there, get in there and get the damn thing out. And the thing is, the thing that's not natural about this is when we started putting out fires, the fuel grew up so fast that a fire is destructive now. Before, it wasn't destructive.
That's what I was telling you, is before us hominids are here.
You're just stealing my ideas.
Well, you know, I have to take some credit
just
here.
Just kidding you.
But no, but that's the thing is, it used to burn naturally, and it used to burn kind of quickly and undergrowth, and it didn't destroy the trees. We stopped things from burning, and the fuel load, as we learned, has become so heavy, on especially federal lands. When a fire starts now, it's destructive. It is just crazy.
It's Smokey the Bear. So I've got a proposition right now. Let's put it on a ballot. Let's start hunting bears again so the forest fires won't be out of control.
That dang Smokey. I knew he was up to no good. He's probably a liberal.
Let's have clip number three, please.
Create a lot of work for people like me, consultants and prescribed fire instructors and everything else. Like, it's in my professional interest to vote for it because it's going to, like, rain grant money for wildfire mitigation and education and everything else. On the flip side, I feel like a lot of the money we're spending right now on wildfire mitigation is kind of not really addressing the root problem. The root problem is we've got too many people, we've got too many constraints on where we can let fires burn. We've got these really, a state that's built on these kind of fractured foundations or bad, we've got a bad setup here for managing this land. Say the Forest Service, if the Forest Service wants to kind of manage this land for resilience, they have to let fires burn. They have to do big burns. We're not going to, so like a problem with like a lot of the state funded wildfire mitigation work right now is that it's really piecemeal. Like we're getting money to like train landowners and we're doing like a 5-acre burn or a 10-acre burn. Someone's getting money and they're doing a 20-acre roadside thinning. But we've got millions and millions of acres of land that needs fire on a frequent basis. And so to me, dumping another $10 billion into these same programs that don't really address the root problems, it's not great policy.
So, that's it. He wants to burn it off. I would rather see. Now, here's an idea I had after 2008, and they put out the $1 trillion Survive California plan, or the United States plan, all the money to get people back to working. I don't know why we couldn't have took chainsaw crews and gone out into the woods and start knocking the fuel down. And we used to call it lopping. You had to knock everything down to 12 or 16 inches and it would be decomposed and gone in a few years. At least the fire danger wouldn't be as severe as it was because you'd get rid of the ladder fuels. The ladder fuels get it up into the crown of the trees and kills the trees.
Well, I mean, you know, the guy's obviously a modern educated wingnut. Three things that I found a problem with. First off, why does the federal government own millions of acres of land? It turned most of that back to private. It'll be getting managed better. They'll make a profit. We won't have an overhead. Two, the reality is, if you go back into the 70s, the Forest Service actually was the only department in the United States government that turned a profit because they had managed log sales and there was not these crazy fires that we're having now. They actually had, you know, timber harvest. They made money. It was a positive return on investment for the American citizens because they actually would allow logging, selective logging, to create fire breaks to private companies, and everybody won. There was money. The private company gained money. The fire risk was mitigated. And this guy's going, well, I want to see everything burn. Well, go back to the 70s. We didn't have these massive burns because there was management making a profit for the United States government.
You know what we had before the 70s? Plenty of spotted owls, you heartless person. You. let's do that last clip. Then it's about time for
a break. So when I think of 30 by 30, I think if we had, you know, if I had a couple billion dollars to spend tomorrow on land conservation, I would say, hey, why don't you buy all this SPI land? Just buy it. Give them what they want. Make it national forest. And then let's let this all burn. Right? That's how you manage it. And that's how you actually achieve meaningful conservation.
So there you go. This guy wants to buy all the land between the Pitt River Arm and the McLeod Arm, Shasta Lake, up behind it, all the way up to probably Highway 89, and maybe he'll get lucky and the fire will get out of control and burn to Oregon. He wants to burn it all off.
Well, because that makes it a national forest that people are going to want to walk to and be tourists. That's why I said this wingnut is an idiot and should lose his job. The government doesn't need to own millions and millions and millions of acres. Give it back to the people, sell it, pay some deficit off, and let them private companies, SPI and whoever, manage it, because they obviously do a much better job of managing. I mean, you know, there isn't like this dead zone of animals versus the Forest Service. They all live there, and the SPI land is, from what I can tell and have researched, is just as healthy. It's actually healthier because there's not as many fuels on the bottom, and so the animals actually have room to roam.
I wonder how SPI is getting compensated for their burn or their forest being burned up.
You're going to get a bill in the mail.
I can't believe that. I don't know. It seems like they'd have enough pull to put a stop to some of that. In fact, the Ponderosa fire that burned up from Highway 32 or 36 up to Shingletown, the only reason they got it out is because they could make a fire line from one clear cut to the next clear cut to the next clear cut. If it hadn't been for SPI, that fire would have gone and gone and gone. We're going to go to a break. I want you to get a pen and a piece of paper out, because I've got a couple phone numbers you're going to want. Are we ready for a break? Everybody needs a break from me and Doug. Doug and I.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Redding Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Shasta Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Thank you, Mr. President. We now have time for one last question. So our last question.
Make this a good one.
Our last one comes from Matthew. Matthew, he was an F-15 pilot. I won't hold that against you.
Yeah. Here, I got it. Mr. President, first off, I want to speak on behalf of everyone here and say thank you for taking time tonight to speak with our troops.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We got a lot of good-looking men in this audience, don't we, huh? And a lot of good-looking women also, by the way. Thank you very much. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to revisit something you've talked about already. My name is Matt Lohmeyer. I was an Air Force F-15 pilot, and I was a commander in your newly created U.S. Space Force. I am also the first veteran of the Space Force, because under the Biden-Harris regime, I was fired from my command and lost my pension for criticizing DEI trainings that were rampant in the military. Those trainings are still dividing our troops, and thank you for saying you would fire those few woke generals who are a big problem.
Stay gone.
I'm going to suggest that it might, in fact, require ongoing oversight and a persistent, consistent, watchful eye within the Pentagon to ensure this monster never returns to the Defense Department. Will you consider establishing a special task force, office, or position to ensure that these monsters never return to the Defense Department?
You know what I'll do? And I'm pretty good at this stuff. Sometimes you get it wrong. I'm going to put you on that task force. I think it's good. Not going to do better than that. I'll put you on. Make sure you give the name. Thank you. Beautiful. Right? I have your approval.
Huh? Yes, sir.
I have your approval. We're not going to get better than him. You're right about it. You're right. 100%. Thank you.
How would Kamala Harris answer that? It's not on the teleprompter. Well, with joy, I think we'll take a look at this program, but there's 32 days left till we vote. 32. Let's see. Commission. I can't make a commission in 32 days.
Yeah. Well, you know, and God bless this gentleman for giving his life basically to our country, for being that pilot and getting to that point and then losing everything because of a stroke of a pen.
Pension too.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Trump should go back to everybody that was released because of COVID-19, retroactive, fill their wallets with the money they lost, put their pension back in standing, and any general or anybody that followed along with that be fired, and they lose their pensions. That's really what should happen.
At the same time, he should pardon and get all the J6ers out of there.
All of them. Every one of them.
Tina Peters, Steve Bannon. That's another form of censorship. They're locking up the people that support Trump.
That's not censorship. That's tyranny. That's tyranny. That's not a matter. That's not censorship. Censorship is, you know, blocking you and I. Put you in prison. That takes it to a whole new level when you lose your freedom. And so, you know, that's the thing, is people ask me what my thoughts are, and I'm hoping I'm wrong. But Trump proved in his first presidency that he was very inept at doing what he needed to do, and he surrounded himself with Obama holdovers. And
he's not inept anymore. He's
ready to rock,
and he's ready to roll.
Well, I'm hoping, because there's enough people that should be charged with outright treason. The Clintons, the Obamas, I could go on and on, including Biden and Harris, could be charged with full-on treason. What they've done to this country is treasonous, and the results of what those trials would be is, I don't need to go there.
But I
don't know he's going to do that.
Well,
I mean, he's already, some of the people he's talking about putting back in his cabinet, you're just like, dude, those were the ones that were bad in the first place.
Okay, that's enough of that.
So, anyways, I hope he gets his pension back.
What I want people to realize is that it's not so much we're voting for Trump or Harris, we're voting for the administrations. And here's a few names from Biden's administration. Anthony Blinken, Merrick Garland, Deb Haaland, Javier Barrera. I mean,
you're fired. Get out of here.
Pete Buttigieg, Mayorkas. Okay, you know, a couple of the proposed people for Trump's administration would be Tulsi Gabbard, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, RFK Jr. I mean, these people can really make a difference.
Three out of four I agree with. Or one out of four I agree with. The other three I'm not fans of.
Well, that's okay. You're only one vote.
That's right. No, I think Vivek. I really like Vivek. I think Tulsi is a Trojan horse. She has been a lifelong liberal. As that clip you sent to me from that guy pointed out, she was standing there with President Assad from Syria as he was killing people, and she was supporting him. I think she's a Trojan horse to get inside and wreak havoc from the inside. Elon Musk, if it wasn't for the fact he's lived off the taxpayers' money to get his billions of dollars, he would probably be just an eccentric tinkerer, because he's made hundreds of billions, but it's come at a huge cost to everybody else, and he's got us now where we've got worthless electric cars that nobody wants after the first 7 years. He's got SpaceX, which is pretty amazing, but again, being run by tax dollars. And RFK, if you know the story about RFK, I agree. He's totally on the COVID thing. He's got the goods on Anthony Fauci. I mean, there are some things that are okay, but as a rule, the man is not a good man. He is not. Him and his family have an incredible history of destroying and abusing women. And
why don't you tell us about the positive things Pete Buttigieg's done?
Oh, no, that first list has all
tell
negative.
Tell us how much you like Anthony Blinken.
That first list is all bad.
Hey, I want to go to commercial for – I want to move to local stuff.
Yes, please. Let's go.
Let's do the commercial that I came up with for Mark Mazzano.
I like Mark.
I do too.
I just wanted you to touch a little bit on this subject. I understand that when Populist K2, McConnell Foundation, and Turtle Bay, although they didn't bring anything to the project, made their pitch to buy the Civic Auditorium down there in the Posse Grounds, that would have been a done deal in a closed session if you, Mark, and Mike DeQuisto hadn't spoke up and insisted this go to the citizens. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. I was in Los Angeles and my phone started blowing up about don't sell the land. You can't sell our land. And I called our city manager and I go, what is going on? And he told me about this unsolicited offer. And I said, you put that on closed session? Didn't we learn something from the closed session deal we did blocking the tribe from their own property? And so at that council meeting that night, Erin Reznor was our mayor at the time. She was in discussions with the city manager. And I just walked up to her and said, I'm not going to closed session. I don't have to go. I don't want to be any part of this. And they took it off of the agenda. Michael was in the same boat.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, they had three votes. They had Erin Reznor, they had Julie Winter, and they had Christian Schrader. And those three would, if Mark hadn't stood up and said, no, we're not going to do this in closed session, they would have done it. They would have come out the next meeting and say, we have an unsolicited offer, and we have accepted it. We've sold the Posse Grounds. We've sold the Civic Auditorium. They're going to put in this fantastic new conference unit, and you're just going to love it.
Yep. No, I like Mazzano. I liked DeQuisto when he was in there. And, you know, the treatment that Mark got from Tanessa Audette, the unethical, I'm trying to think of the right word to describe how you
stole.
There you go. The stolen mayorship that should have gone to Mr. Mazzano. God bless Mark for standing up for something like that, because that would have gone through the back door and then we would have been told.
Do we have any examples of where they did something like that?
Oh, yeah. You mean that one down by the casino? No. And other than that one.
That's where they sold the right of way. It was only about a quarter of a mile to, actually Sierra Pacific Industries,
yep.
Nonprofit.
Yeah.
Cutting the access to the casino ground from the, Indians to, keep them from, having access and building a casino.
Yep.
Mike DeQuisto said, no, we're gonna get sued on this. And Mark Mazzano was against it. But Erin Reznor, she was all for it. We'll ramrod it right on through here.
You know, backdoor deals. There you go. That's the city council under Julie Winters. That's what they try to do is backdoor.
And you get back to, Erin. You know,
and she's running for city council again, folks.
She's running for the 2-year term against Mark Mazzano.
Oh.
But she was all for that, and then she decided to run for the county. So she came up with a riverfront specific plan.
Yeah.
To get out of voting, doing an unpopular vote so she wouldn't look bad.
Yeah.
And they extended it on down to take in the Kutras track down there, which is all privately owned. They've got no business doing that, in my opinion, which segues up to Proposition P. I'm going to read you Proposition P here. The power of eminent domain must be limited and must only be used in cases demonstrating public necessity. This measure would prohibit the county from using eminent domain to acquire property from a private owner without their consent, for the purpose of giving the property to another private party. It would also ensure that the protection of private rights embodied in the charter of the county is not subject to change by any future Board of Supervisors without an amendment returning to the electors. Now, an example of what could happen here is, let's go out to Highway 44 and Millville Plains Road.
Okay.
It's not developed out there.
Nope.
Say Doug owns the northeast corner of that, and Walmart wants to come in and put in a distribution center.
Yep.
And Doug doesn't want to sell.
Yeah, I was going to make a nature preserve.
Okay, so the county says, well, you know, Walmart's going to put this in here, and they're going to generate all these jobs and all these taxes. Doug, we're taking your property. Here's $20,000 for your little old tiny yacht. Here, you can have the property, Walmart, and bam.
Yep.
This protects us from those types of situations. And I can't help but think that it kind of feathers on down to the riverfront specific plan where the Kutras family owns most of that property.
Yep.
The specific plan might say, we're going to put in a three-story restaurant. On top of it, we're going to have a driving range, and it's really going to be nice. And the Kutras family says, no, that's not what we want to do with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're going to do with it.
Yep.
Here's your money for your property. Hey, big contractor, here. We'll give you this because you're going to generate so much more money, kind of like Big League Dreams.
Yeah, which is just generating it by the tons.
And there we go. So this protects the public from that.
Well, and the thing is, eminent domain was originally in its intent designed for like right-of-ways and railroad and that kind of stuff, that if they're trying to go across, I guess, the path of least resistance versus going up and over a hill, they could go through and they could do a strip of land for a freeway or whatever. That's what it was designed for, but it has turned over the years, and New Jersey is a great example, where they literally eminent domained an entire city block to give it to a developer who was going to build a casino. The developer went bankrupt, and that block is now empty and vacant, and the people who were there lost everything that they had worked their entire lives for. So that's the misuse of the eminent domain.
And then we've got Julie Winter. She's voicing her opinion. Timmy Garman, Lawrence Russell, and Pamela Morgan, they're writing an argument against it. We believe that yet to be enacted charter should have time to mature before changes are made. How does a charter mature?
At what age is it okay to make changes to it? 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? Under what guidance? A liberal guidance, a conservative guidance? So that's just stupid. The rule is it's allowed to be changed, but it has to go to the vote of the citizens.
Measure P does not fully consider expert opinions, legal implications, or long-term impacts on county operations and services or costs.
Expert opinions. So just remember, this is Julie Winters. Expert opinions told us COVID kills you. We need to be locked down 6 feet of distance. Turned out all of those expert opinions were false and lies. So there you go, Julie. Let's go back to expert opinions.
The charter was approved in March of 2024, is not yet in effect. In the spirit of supporting local control, the voters deserve a chance to observe the effects of the new law before changes are made.
What's the problem giving the people the right to vote whether they want eminent domain or not? What is the problem with her? Why is that such an issue? Let the people decide, and if it's 51 for and 51 or against, the people have decided. Problem solved.
These people believe that the government should tell you what to do.
That's my point.
Us free-thinking people believe that we elect them to represent us and do what we want them to do.
Well, it's supposed to be us against the government. It's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, not a government against the people, and the government is, quote-unquote, smarter than the people. And so, Winters, there you go. Nice that you're going in the whole commie mode. Good job.
And we can depend on the government hiring experts just like Forest Service guys.
Yes, so that they burn the entire thing down. That's a good expert. There's another one for you, Julie.
So let's move on to Measure Q. This is a little bit shorter. The measure would allow the board to make appointment to a vacant elected office, call for a special election, or consolidate the vacancy and place it on the next scheduled election. Now, this is for elected positions besides the supervisors. You've got your district attorney, you got the sheriff, you got the tax collector, you got
registered
the auditor.
Voters.
Yes, all those. And the example that comes to mind and everybody has heard is when Tom Bozinko got reelected, saying he was going to serve the whole term and then retired in a year.
Yep.
They appointed Eric McGraney. And if Eric McGraney had done a halfway decent job, he would have been the incumbent for 3 years, and that's a big leg up when it comes election time.
Yep.
What this does is it says the supervisors can leave it vacant if they choose till the next election. They can call a special election, or they can conciliate the position with another one until the normal election.
Yep.
I might have missed something there. That's okay. The board believes all electors in Shasta County have a right to expect their choice, express their choice, and vote local officials representing their interests.
Yeah.
This gives us the right to appoint somebody to a position that became vacant through no fault of their own or through retirement. Yeah, you know, the same thing happened with Stephanie Bridget. Steve Carlton had to step away. I don't think it was his fault. I heard that he had dementia. And they appointed Stephanie, and she was there for quite a while, so she got reelected.
Yeah.
I'm not sure anybody. See, that's another thing here, too. If Brian Muir, he was the treasurer, I think, he retired, and Nolda Short was appointed, and when it came election time, she didn't have any competition.
Yeah. So she was an incumbent.
Well, they just appointed her. There's no sense having a special election.
Well, I gotta say
that's kind of common sense.
Well, it is common sense unless somebody's really controversial. But then again, if they were controversial, they'd probably have an opponent. So I agree. Not having, an election when somebody is completely unopposed is kind of the moot, because if they get one vote for, they win the election.
That's more than 50% of the votes.
Oh, well, there you go.
So a no vote against Measure Q is a vote for local control. How do you figure that?
I have no idea. You take it away from locals.
We agree that all voters in Shasta County have a right to express their choices and vote for local official that they feel represents them. Voters have a right to vote for local officials without changing a charter that is not in place yet. They're not changing the charter. They're adding to it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've got a lot of ideas on more things we should add to our charter. Maybe we ought to outlaw idiots. Estimated cost of holding a single item special election average around $900,000. I didn't realize it was that much. I thought maybe since we owned the machines, they were almost free.
Well, that seems like a pretty steep price for...
I was advocating having a special election in about a year, strictly for charter issues.
Oh. Maybe every 2 years, doing a charter thing with whatever comes up for every 2 years?
Yes, and have the people submit their ideas. I would submit high school kids count our votes. Have a hand count system and have high school kids come in for an hour each and count votes.
Oh.
Get them involved.
Well, yeah, forced labor, I like it.
That's right. Well, they need to learn how to work.
Well, they got to learn something because they ain't learned it in school. That's for dang sure.
So this is another idea against it. And this is by Frank Treadway. He's one of the recallers.
Ah,
he's
enough said.
Measure Q claims to increase voter input, but the drawbacks of frequent elections potentially disrupts the governance, outweighs the perceived benefits. It is essential to balance democratic participation with a need for stable and elective leadership.
Oh, yes. Giving the people the right to vote on stuff is not democratic, so we got to stop them so they can't do it. I think you actually had a good idea there, Nick, is if we want to do like every 2 years, it's not a special election because every 2 years the Senate or La Malfa comes up. So every 2 years we do a charter and we put the top, let's say, 5 items that have been suggested over the last 24 months on the ballot. And we let the people choose every 2 years. It's not a special ballot. It's not a special election. It's just, here's the 5 things. Here's what they stand for. Yes or no?
I think we ought to have an election every November and people can really look at what we're doing. It doesn't have to have 50 bonds on it.
No.
You know? I mean, this is a Shasta County election. Nothing else.
Well, that's it.
And I think people would pay attention and get more involved.
Well, I don't know. Every year going to the thing, I think we're already lazy enough as it is. I mean, every 4 years, what is it they're projecting that maybe as much as 40% of the electorate's not even going to vote in this election in spite of the outcome that really could dramatically change it? So doing it every year, I think, would reduce the participation, in my opinion.
So you and Frank Treadway are in agreement.
Nope. I'm saying that once every 2 years, giving you credit is actually not a bad idea. So there it is. I did it publicly and gave Nick credit.
Hey, here's the two announcements I've got to get to. I almost forgot to. There's an inaugural Honoring Our Heroes golf tournament. All proceeds go to the Reading Veterans Home. It's a four-player scramble. $125 per player, $500 per team, limited to the first 100 players. Fees include a golf cart, range, balls, and food, and special contests. It's November 1st, and it's going to be at Gold Hills. It starts at 10 a.m. It's a shotgun start. And if you want to get involved with this, get your pen out. Call Jeff at 530-246-7867. Or Darlene at 530-224-3814. It's 246-7867, 224-3814. And then we've got the Walk for Freedom. And this is about child trafficking. In case you didn't know, there was an incident up here by UPREP and Shasta High School of a guy grooming a young lady, a minor, that was working in his restaurant.
Oh.
And she told her mother, which is quite unusual. Her mother went to Kevin Cry. Kevin Cry got the gears going and got a lot of people involved, and that guy was just sentenced to 2 years
Good.
In prison.
Good.
And there's more of that going on.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more of it going on. I can't imagine it. It just, it's unbelievable to me. But this Reading Walk for Freedom, there's people walking all over the United States. And this is just one chapter out here, and it's bringing to everybody's attention this problem. And you can, I'm sure you can donate some money, you can sponsor somebody. But the second annual Reading Walk for Freedom is happening on 10/19. Check-in is at 8:30 at Lake Reading Park, 2225 Benton Drive. They're going to walk about 4 miles round trip.
Oh, wow.
If you have any questions, please contact info at guardiansforfreedom.org. Info at guardiansforfreedom.org. They've got food trucks. They've got speakers. You're welcome. I would encourage everybody to go to that. And at the same time, when you get down to the Reading Auditorium, they've got the Golden Lapazoodle. And that's last year they had about 500 golden retrievers there.
Oh, geez.
That's the only dog that's allowed to it. And I mean, it puts a smile on your face. I walked over to the fountain and they dumped a bunch of tennis balls in it. And those golden retrievers, boy, they were just having a ball retrieving those. And I want to encourage you to go to mountaintoptimes.substack.com. Doc Danuka is on there with Chris Street, and he's explaining his plan for bringing a small hospital college to Reading.
Yeah.
To get more doctors. He believes that this small college, these doctors will get involved with the community and choose to stay there. He explains of what a shortage of doctors we have.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Doc Danuka has a new idea on what to do with the anywhere from $38 to $100 million Shasta County has coming from the opioid settlement.
Oh.
From the pharmacies and the makers of the opiates that people are strung out on, and it's to, I don't know, make us whole. They're wanting to put together. He's got a different approach. I would encourage everybody to go to that and listen to it. mountaintoptimes.substack.com.
Yeah, I watched that one you sent to me about Street and the lady, I think it was Leslie from talking about the Board of Education and
Leslie
stuff.
Leslie Sawyer.
Yeah, that was actually very, very enlightening. So if you get a chance, I would definitely go look at it because they were laying facts out. And no, it was really good. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned about the child trafficking. One of the best movies I've been able to see forever, it was The Sound of Freedom. And at the end of it, it comes on that every year in the United States, the number one country in the planet for this, 85,000 children just go missing in our
right
country.
Right now, there's 350,000 kids missing that cross the border.
Yeah. And I mean, that's us. We're American. This is what, I mean, I don't know. As an American, it's beyond fathom to think that we allow, that many kids to come in here. I mean, and even locals. I mean, it's not just that, but I mean, kids, and we were watching, Liz and I were watching a movie thinking about Missing. This is interesting. Is on Netflix. There's a show called Murder Mountain.
Oh, I've seen that.
Oh my God. What's going on over in Trinity? In Trinity County or Humboldt County is amazing.
Colorado has passed a law they can give the death penalty to a pedophile that rapes a kid.
That's good.
That's good. We ought to bring it out here and include methamphetamine cooks and maybe, I guess we're done. Peace, love, and waterbeds.
See you in 2 weeks.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.